Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. My guest today is Alan Treffler. He's founder, CEO, and chairman of Pegasystems. His awards include being named the American Business Awards Software CEO of the Year for 2009 and Public Company CEO of the Year in 2011 by the Massachusetts Technology Leadership Council. Alan has just gotten done writing and releasing a book that I think we're going to have a really interesting conversation about. And the book is entitled Build for Change, Revolutionizing Customer Engagement Through Continuous Digital Innovation. Alan, welcome to Edgewise.
Oh, thank you very much, Dave.
Now, I need to tell you before we get started here, there are enough frightening words in this title for most of the senior leadership people I know. I know it strikes me that you definitely, your going in proposition was, it's a wake-up call.
Well, I think companies are in a much more precarious state than they even realize. And many of them think they're in trouble, but I think this is a time when you're going to increasingly see divergence between the leaders and the folks who can make the transitions.
All right. So, Alan, why would a customer go out of his or her way to destroy my company?
Well, you know, there's this long history that we've seen of businesses having to deal with increasingly empowered consumers. You know, if you go back a ways, there'd be people who would write nasty letters to the editor of a paper. That might get a little bit of visibility. You know, you'd see people who would actually perhaps put up a site like Walmart Sucks. But today, the customers are so empowered. They have such an ability, such a bully pulpit, where they can really resonate both with their friends and with people they don't know over Twitter and other sorts of means, that they have at their disposal the ability to get even. And increasingly, partially because I think the consumer today is perhaps appropriately feeling more entitled, they will take advantage of that. But you know, likewise, Dave, if they love a company, they'll actually be pretty aggressive sometimes about advocating.
Right. They will love, capital L, love a company.
Yeah, and we call this the Gen D phenomenon. You know, people have been talking about what they call Gen C, which is the connected generation. Now, these are the people always on their cell phones, always completely connected to the internet and to each other. Gen D takes that up to the next level. You know, boy, they're connected, but they want to either demonize companies they don't like, or they want to devour the companies that they love.
And again, you have to forgive me here, but in going through the book, I'm caught by section headings and chapter headings that include things like death by data or data suicide. To the uneducated eye, that might seem a little overwrought. No?
Well, you know, the challenge you've got is that businesses have found panaceas that are just not going to work. And one of the terrific ones is this whole big data movement. Now, don't get it wrong. We love data. But I think that perhaps a human metaphor might make this resonate a little bit better. If you think about a human being, well, you know, they got a lot of data. But the data represents history. The data in your mind is really memory. What makes you an effective person, an effective manager, is being able to marry that memory up with judgment, with insight, with the rules and regulations that perhaps control how and when and, you know, what the true insights are in that data. But even that's not sufficient. You actually need, beyond that, the muscle to be able to execute, to be able to operationalize what the data might be telling you. So this focus on data and the focus on analytics, in the absence of complementing it with the right techniques and technologies and management practices to be able to operationalize it, is part of what is going to cause companies to die, because they're just focusing on a part of the problem, and in many ways, the part they're focusing on is the least important.
So where does intent come into the mix here for both customers and companies?
So, you know, the data tells you what's happened, and let's face it, you can get a lot of data about customers and about prospects. But intent is about understanding and being able to distill down what that customer is really coming to you for. What is their intent? Why do they want to interact with you? And then being able to have another side to that coin, which is to be able to figure out wisely what intent you should have relative to that client. And being able to always provide the next best action, next best offer, know when you've got to do something special to retain a customer, know when it's the right time to sell them something. That marriage of customer intent with business intent is what gives you the context to use that data wisely and to make wise decisions.
What is a rogue system and what makes it such a problem?
Well, you know, it's interesting because this gets into the second half of the book where we talk about, you know, some of the fallacies and flaws that exist in companies. One of the problems you've got is the traditional management approach to the way people use technology and use software in their businesses has really, really become very dysfunctional. And what that means basically is that business people who want to get something done, they want to offer a new product. They want to be able to make the business look more coherent. They want to be able to adapt to a regulation or to a competitor. They find they end up in these long queues. They're waiting for stuff to get done. They have to, frankly, come up with sometimes bizarre cost justifications that they can't really be sure of, but are often largely invented. And because that's such a frustrating and dysfunctional process, people end up just going and doing it themselves. Now, on one hand, you can applaud folks for that sort of entrepreneurial zeal. But when people use technology in ways like it wasn't intended, like they build macros in Microsoft Excel to do really complicated processes and analytics, you know, they're creating these unsustainable islands of automation that ultimately are going to fall under their own weight and ultimately make the business less agile, even though it feels for the next 90 days or 120 days like you're getting something done.
So the idea of this rogue system is somebody had the gumption or the wherewithal or just got sick and tired of the way things were before and took it on to themselves to create this sort of freestanding, one-time-only solution, house of cards, rather brittle type of thing that really, if a company becomes too dependent upon it, will absolutely, it will be a problem.
Yeah, and lots of examples. And it's interesting because these rogue systems sometimes masquerade as mainstream systems.
Right.
And I can give you some examples. But, you know, any system that doesn't look at the customer holistically, that doesn't actually have the ability in the future, it doesn't have to have it day one, but if in the future it doesn't have the ability, the architecture, the approach to marry the customer intent and the business intent across all the channels, all the products, all the touch points, any one of those systems is almost by definition a rogue system because it's going to further create silos in the business. And it's those silos that destroy customer satisfaction and destroy efficiency.
Existing organizational structures and persistent organizational hierarchies may actually be the largest human-centric barriers to change. Now, what can realistically be done about this? There's a lot of heavy lifting with human-related challenges.
Well, I think there's a lot that must be done, and you're absolutely right. It's challenging. But I think this is where the AMA constituencies actually have as a real opportunity to make things different. Because I'll tell you, when I think about the companies I deal with, which are really sort of the Fortune 400 firms who are our customers who tend to use this, I see that they're increasingly open to feedback from all levels of the organization. A lot of these companies know they have a problem. Now, the only way that we've seen it work is when companies commit to not creating long-term silos, and they commit to trying to change the fundamental way that they, well, create and support their systems in some meaningful ways. And, you know, what the book tries to talk about is how do you get prepared to have that conversation with your management so that you can explain to them both the risk of this customer apocalypse, this destruction that they may face, but also that they better think differently about the problem if they're going to be successful.
Now, you advocate thinking in layers. Okay, so what are these layers?
Well, you know, the difference between silos is silos is where you got a company whose products are so disconnected.
When you've got little turf wars going on there and, you know, whatever, power, you know, spheres of power and whatnot.
You got a big bank, say, and you got to call one number to be able to deal with the credit card. Then you want to ask a question about your banking account, and they either transfer you or you have to call another number. Those are examples of silos. And silos can occur either around products where silos can occur around channels. You know, we see this crazy thing happening where a whole new generation of silos are being created around mobile, where people are treating mobile as if it's not just something that's got to be ubiquitous and part of all of the bank's processes or all of the company's processes, as if it's a separate thing. Well, the customer hates the idea of silos. They want to be able to have a continuous experience with the organization, where that continuous experience needs to be able to go across channels, and it needs to be able to go across products. Thinking in layers is about saying, hey, look, for any product we may offer, regardless of channel, there's a layer of capability that we need. And what I'm going to do is, instead of creating all these silos, I'm going to reuse this layer. Think of sort of a layer cake, mm-hmm. where the bottom are how I fundamentally want to do certain things for a customer, and then where I need to tune it for an individual channel or the specialization of a product for a geography, I just add additional layers that only have what's different. It's the way in photography you build up a rich and robust picture from, well, a layer that may be the background, mm-hmm. layers that may have some of the key elements, and you can really tune it, mm-hmm. and it becomes a coherent whole. Mm-hmm. That's what thinking in layers is. It's about continuity of thinking.
Can organizations drive innovation through evolutionary smaller chunks or only through revolutionary larger projects?
Well, I think ultimately, for true agility to occur, you need to think in terms of a larger directional context. What directionally do I want to do? But you've got to be able to really empower the business to do rapid change, to really become agile. And the fundamental thing, or a fundamental thing that you need to do to pull that off, is you need to get the business people and the IT people to work in a fundamentally different way. Mm-hmm. If you want to understand more about what that might look like, mm-hmm. in most businesses, the business people, the folks on the front line doing sales, service, developing products, what they do is they write these big specification documents and they throw them over the wall to folks in technology who them and their partners, they implement them in these cryptic programming languages. Mm-hmm. The problem with that is it just takes too long. And it's not actually involving the business mm-hmm. in really understanding what's in the solution. And it relegates the technologists to some degree to being this big typing pool. We need to really democratize the way that this critical technology is used in businesses by being able to empower the business people to themselves define and directly capture what they want the technology to do, and be able to tune and adjust the many things. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, we got rid of the typing pool 25 years ago mm-hmm. when we stopped having these madmen-like people dictating stuff to other people who typed. Now everybody is empowered to do many communications themselves. It is possible, by thinking differently about the technology, to be able to make the business people be active participants in how the technology is delivered.
What's your advice for companies that are stuck in maintenance mode, aka they're treading water, and they're waiting for, perhaps market conditions to improve?
Well, I think that those who wait for market conditions to improve will find that they're waiting for their own wake, as it is. There is absolutely no chance that businesses are going to survive if they do not respond to a couple of interesting things. One is some of this demographics change around customers. But the other is, if you take a look at most companies that have been around for a little bit, they have internal systems that are just appalling to use. And this Gen D, which is now entering the workforce, are the people who are actually providing the service, working for the company. They are rejecting these laborious, archaic, too hard to use, redundant systems. And so companies need, both for their customers, but also to effectively support their own staff, get moving on figuring out how they can become what we call the digital enterprise. A company that applies digital technology for better service of its customers, but also to make the staff's job more flexible and richer.
We've been speaking to Alan Treffler. He's author of a book entitled Build for Change, Revolutionizing Customer Engagement Through Continuous Digital Innovation. Alan, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
AMA webinars provide 90 minutes of focused how-to instruction and specific solutions for solving your most pressing work issues. For $149, you'll participate in an in-depth course taught by an expert who will answer your questions and guide you through the process a step at a time. For a complete schedule of upcoming AMA webinars, visit our events calendar at amanet.org/events. Here at the AMA, we value your feedback. If you've ever attended any of our webcasts, webinars, or seminars, you've no doubt encountered our feedback surveys. Well, our podcasts are no different. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.